Section 2. The transition to Spanish control. As you read, look for events leading up to a revolt against the new Spanish government, Governor O'Reilly's tactics for controlling the Louisiana colony, different approaches to illegal trade taken by Governors Unzaga and Galvez, terms militia, cabildo, Code O'Reilly, laissez-faire. At the end of the French and Indian War, the North American continent was divided between England and Spain. Spain's new holdings were vast, and its obligations were multiplied. In part, this accounts for the slow pace at which the Spanish took control of Louisiana. Spain hoped to maintain Louisiana at as small a price to itself as possible. This strategy helps to explain why Governor Ulloa was assigned so few troops to accompany him to Louisiana. Spain also hoped to limit the costs of administration. They looked for ways to make the existing French governmental structures work with, rather than against, Spanish laws and policies. This was not to be. Many of the men who served on the French Superior Council were not interested in cooperating with Ulloa and Spain. In fact, they hoped to convince France to retake control of the colony. They even sent representatives to Paris to make their case. Even without a return of French control, the Creoles were committed to protecting their long-established patterns of trade. Because of financial problems and years of warfare, France had not been able to supply the colony with its basic needs since the 1740s. Over time, the trade practices that developed in the colony included illegal but necessary dealings with English traders. Prosperous members of the Superior Council worried that these irregular but profitable arrangements would be threatened under Spanish control. When Ulloa proclaimed new trade regulations, their worst fears came true. The colonists' revolt. These fears and the desire to protect their own economic well-being provided the impetus, incentive, driving force for the open revolt that broke out in 1768. Encouraged by members of the Superior Council, unhappy colonists traveled to the city from the German coast and the Acadian settlements to the west. They were joined by hundreds of men from the city who poured into the streets on the night of October 27th and took control of the city. The rioters held a meeting and wrote a petition asking Ulloa to leave the colony at once. Using the petition as evidence of popular support, the Superior Council agreed with the rioters and ordered the governor to leave within 3 days. With so few troops at his disposal, Ulloa had little choice but to comply. Once back in Spanish territory, the ousted, removed, thrown out of office governor spent considerable time making reports about the revolt and the people he believed to be responsible for it. Spain takes effective control. When the Spanish sent their next expedition to Louisiana, they corrected many of the mistakes of Ulloa's entrance. Most importantly, they sent a decisive leader and skilled military man, General Alejandro O'Reilly, to head the second Spanish arrival. He was a skilled and respected soldier with many victories to his credit. O'Reilly was accompanied by 12 ships and nearly 2,000 men. This was an overwhelming show of military force and more than enough men to put down any opponents who dared to oppose the Spanish a second time. O'Reilly arrived in August of 1769 and spent time at the mouth of the Mississippi before proceeding upriver to New Orleans. His arrival at the city was both impressive and well-planned, and O'Reilly showed none of the hesitation to take charge that Ulloa had. He also immediately set out to discover who had been responsible for the revolt. After a thorough investigation, O'Reilly acted. Ultimately, the general pardoned all of the common people who had taken part in the uprising. The leaders of the revolt, however, he dealt with severely. Of the 13 men put on trial, 12 were found guilty. 6 were sentenced to prison terms in Cuba. The remaining 6 were sentenced to execution before a firing squad in New Orleans. Although he had pardoned the general public, many believed O'Reilly's punishments were too harsh. Those people gave him the nickname Bloody O'Reilly. Despite his nickname, O'Reilly was actually a fair and effective administrator. He focused on developing more regular trade practices at New Orleans with an emphasis on encouraging trade with Spanish ports, while discouraging illegal trade with the British. He also set price controls that made it more affordable for colonists to buy necessary food and supplies. even though, to his frustration, much of that food still came from British sources. He also directed that a census be taken. O'Reilly reorganized the local militia, a military force composed mainly of citizen soldiers, and improved the condition of forts throughout the colony. He also reached out to Native Americans in the region. He met with tribal leaders, presented them with gifts, and worked to establish new understandings with them. O'Reilly completely reorganized colonial government. He abolished the French Superior Council, whose members had led the revolt, and replaced it with a Spanish governing body called the Cabildo. The Cabildo's members were responsible for enforcing the colony's laws, advising the governor, and acting as a court. The Cabildo adopted a new code of laws based on the Spanish laws of the Indies. In Louisiana, these new laws came to be known as the Code O'Reilly. O'Reilly was responsible for numerous and impressive accomplishments by the time he turned the colony over to the second official Spanish governor and departed Louisiana for Cuba in March 1770. Governor Nzaga. Louis de Nzaga, who had accompanied O'Reilly to New Orleans, became the colony's second Spanish governor in early 1770. Nzaga was in his 50s and a bachelor when he arrived, but he quickly married a Creole woman named Elizabeth de Saint-Maxent. Although the marriage may have been for love, it also had economic advantages because the bride's father, Gilbert Antoine de Saint-Maxent, was one of the colony's wealthiest traders. Nzaga encouraged many of his officers to marry local women who had both family connections and substantial dowries, property brought by a woman to the marriage. Nzaga was more pragmatic or practical about the economic situation in New Orleans than O'Reilly had been. Although doing business with British traders was banned, Nzaga often ignored or tacitly, without actually saying, approved of this trade when it was necessary to feed the colonists or was helpful to his colonial allies. Nzaga served for 7 years, but had to be replaced when his eyesight failed. Bernardo de Galvez, governor and hero. Bernardo de Galvez was a young and vigorous man in his early 30s when he became governor of Louisiana in 1777. Galvez had arrived in the colony to lead the militia, but was appointed governor a year later. His career as a Spanish soldier and colonial administrator had benefited from having an uncle who headed the Spanish colonial administration. But Galvez was also a talented administrator and a skilled and experienced soldier. Like Nzaga before him, he was able to gain immediate wealth and important connections through his marriage to another of de Saint-Maxent's daughters, Felicite. Governor Nzaga had exercised a practical and laissez-faire, non-interference by the government in economic matters approach to illegal trade with the British, but Galvez worked hard and consistently to eject British traders from the river and from their central role in the local economy. In fact, for a brief period, he succeeded in discouraging British trade. He also supported the development of other economic activities like growing tobacco and harvesting timber, both for export. Perhaps most importantly, Galvez convinced the usually stingy Spanish to raise the annual sum they awarded the colony for governance and maintenance. Special feature: the Cabildo. When Alejandro O'Reilly replaced the French Superior Council with a governing body called the Cabildo, he also ordered that the existing French colonial government building be updated and improved. That renovated building was damaged beyond repair in the devastating fire that swept New Orleans in 1788. The building was reconstructed and began to serve again as the home of the Cabildo in 1794. At that time, the building had only two stories and looked similar to other Spanish colonial governmental centers throughout Central and South America. The building's second-floor meeting room for the Spanish Council was called the Sala Capitular, or Council Chamber. It was in this room in 1803 that Spain transferred Louisiana back to France and, a month later, that France transferred Louisiana to the United States. Thus, the building is very significant in both Louisiana and U.S. history. In 1847, the New Orleans District Council voted to add a third-story mansard roof and cupola to the building. This style was popular in French agriculture and gave the building a French character it had not had in its original design. Thus, in design terms, the building is very much a French and Spanish hybrid or mix, reflecting the history of the colony before it became part of the United States. After its redesign in 1847, the Cabildo continued to be used for various governmental functions until it became the headquarters of the Louisiana State Museum in 1911. It remains part of the museum today. Anyone can visit the building and its exhibits to learn more about the building's history and the history of Louisiana. Have you visited the Cabildo? If so, what do you remember most about the building? If not, would you like to visit it?